enjoy a good squeeze.
Hello, hello, and welcome to A Good Squeeze. I'm August.
And I'm Margo.
And this is the show where we, as we just said, kind of squeeze. We squeeze little James Bond into our lives.
That's right, on a regular basis, or at least we try to.
Yeah. I'm the nostalgic expert.
And I'm the novice viewer.
Considerably. And we are... And we're diving into the saga of Daniel Craig with Casino Royale. And, you know, I'm going to get it out of the way now because I keep forgetting to mention it in these episodes. I like to set the mood when we sit down and watch these movies. I like to immerse us into them by what are we eating? What are we drinking? Like, how are we setting the vibe and get our mindset into the world of James Bond, especially the one that we're going to jump into. So this one, I didn't do anything crazy. Had a little Vesper cocktail.
Mm-hmm.
This one's more from the book, but as far as food goes, in that book, Bond eats lobster with liver pate. I made that, but I like mixed it together and kind of put it on a piece of toast. It was pretty nice.
That was really good. I didn't realize that's what that was.
Yeah, it's in the book, not in the movie.
Because I came in from work and I was like, I'm hungry. And you were like, I made you an appetizer and I inhaled it. It was delicious.
Yeah.
But
I'm like, I'd make that.
Yeah.
I'd make that again for anybody.
That's right. It shows how much of a novice I am.
Well, I mean... You didn't read the book.
Yeah, I didn't.
I mean, I read the book and I didn't remember that. That was a quick Google search. Yeah. What does Bond eat?
What does
Bond eat? I couldn't find...
yogurt.
Yeah, well, you know, he eats a lot of eggs. A lot of eggs in his diet.
This is like the least sexy food in the world.
I know. He eats
Pounds fucking hard-boiled eggs.
Nah, they're scrambled.
Oh,
always
Lord.
Always scrambled.
In a Ziploc bag.
Yeah, with bacon and like a pack of cigarettes. That's his breakfast.
Wow, the British.
There's a scene in Casino Royale near the end where Bond's eating caviar and like just slapping it on toast. And it just looks so good. I was trying to find some caviar on the fly, but couldn't.
There's like a global caviar shortage.
Maybe that's why I couldn't find
it. I totally made that up, but the confidence was there. So,
yeah. So glad I got that out of the way. Because I do that. Mm-hmm. I've done that for every single Bond movie, whether I mention it or not.
Mm-hmm.
I curate a drink or a meal to what we're watching.
Like you mentioned, the key word there is immersion and just really getting into the zone mentally, physically, making it this whole body experience. Which is really cool. I mean, it adds so much to it. It's not just us sitting down and watching a movie. It's experiencing the movie. And the most practical way and the easiest way to do that is through food and drinks.
And we did that for Casino Royale. And we've mentioned on the show... In the past, like, we're not going in a particular order with any of these movies as we navigate through all, each of them. We're going strictly by mood, feeling.
Mm-hmm.
There's
an active effort to make sure we're not just doing all the Roger Moores and all the Timothy Daltons and this and that. And, you know, just coming from, like, you introducing this stuff to me, we're also kind of retelling history. As we had mentioned before, a big thing with me in Casino Royale is that was the second Bond film you tried to show me, and I fell asleep. Mm-hmm. It was also 11 p.m., and I was very tired.
And this movie's 2.5 hours long.
Yeah, so, you know, there's an excuse there. But how I slept through that movie astounds me.
It's cozy.
It's cozy, but, like, it's... You know, bang, bang, pew, pew, like every 5 seconds, like, the whole time like that.
You hum the Incredibles again.
Again, I do that. Yeah, screw it. You know what? we're in this deep, baby, so.
But that brings me to my next question. Why Casino Royale as opposed to maybe Timothy Dalton or even George Lazenby?
Oh, we'll save Georgie boy.
Okay. But why... Why Daniel Craig?
Well, there's something about it just ending his whole reign on the Bond franchise and him making such an impact on it. And something that you had mentioned to me was that when he was first announced as Bond, you didn't have a particularly good reaction to it, as did most people.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just got this incredible, like, stronghold on it now. You know, you think Daniel Craig, you think Bond. You think Bond, you think Daniel Craig, from the novice perspective. And, you know, that's, I feel like that's something we wanted to pepper in. Did I choose it or did you choose it?
So I asked you, I was like, what movie do you want to do? And you're like, I'm feeling a Daniel Craig. I'm like, well, then we're doing Casino Royale. Because something about his run with Bond, well, not something about it, it's very obvious. They are kind of a series. Like, they kind of feed into each other. At least they try to here and there, especially like with, like Spectre, kind of try to tie them all together and things like that.
And it's going to be interesting diving into a different Bond after this, because we're anticipating the story to continue to a certain extent. And
these, you mean the next actor outside of
spoiler alert, we're not going to do a Daniel Craig after this ever again. No, I'm joking. I lost my train of thought.
I just said this, the Daniel Craig movies kind of tell an overarching story, you know, that's why I was like, we'll start with Casino Royale. But as you said, my first experience with this, I was in that boat of people who were like, what? A blonde haired, blue eyed James Bond, that guy from Tomb Raider.
I don't know him from anything else other, well, Knives Out and all that, but that's all I knew about Daniel Craig. I knew he was Bond and that's it. I mean, I remember when the movie came out, it was right around the time Twilight came out, didn't it?
It came out, Twilight came out like a year later.
Really? Okay, I'm trying to think. Oh, it might have been.
Oh, no, 2 years later. Twilight came out like 2008.
Oh, then I'm thinking of Quantum of Solace. Never mind.
Cause... Yeah, Quantum and Twilight came out the same year.
Okay, I'll save my story for when we do Quantum then.
Okay. But, you know, I was a big Bond fan at this time, and I was young. I was like 14, 15 when they announced he was going to be the next James Bond, and I was a big Pierce Brosnan guy. So I heard, you know, through the news that Pierce Brosnan was gearing up to do another one. And I was very excited about that. And then to hear they're going in a different direction and this is the next James Bond. And the production image, or not even the announcement image they showed, was like him riding in on a boat with a suit, and he had like longer hair. Because he's, you know, doing another movie, and he just like did not look like my vision of James Bond, you know, and I was very much like poo pooing it big time, big poo poos from me, and you know, when it finally was coming out, and I got to see it in the theater. This was the first Bond film I actually got to see in the cinema, on the big screen. So there's that's special about it, but it, you know, it did not take long. It took seconds for me to already, like, I went in like anticipating not to like it, to not like it. It took seconds for me to like not like it. It opened black and white. I'm like, what the hell? And then there's no gun barrel.
Yeah.
I'm like, what the hell? But that was seconds. Minutes later, I remember right when it cuts into that opening credit song, I was like, I took my words and I went,
I don't know why I did it with you. Like, I was like, I want some. I will say that was the biggest thing that stood out to me, because when I was falling asleep to it the first time around, totally forgot about that scene. And we had rewatched it since. And that whole scene, the opening scene with just in black and white, it was such a smart move on their end, because they could have gone the traditional route. They could have set it up this and that. But the way that you'd be presenting Bond is like immediate replacement. Like, you're used to this, but look, it's a completely different face. It's like if you saw your babysitter wearing your mom's clothes again. I don't know why, but, you know, you're like, yeah, but you're not her, you know? Okay.
Worst analogy.
It was pretty.
It works.
I think. But... Yeah. So then, it's not the worst. It's good. If it works, it's good. And speaking of, if it works, freaking that opening scene, they took so many creative liberties. They actually set up the character. That's what they did. They took those first few seconds. They're like, we need to sell this bond. We need to sell it. And they did it beautifully. Because they caught us off guard with that gun barrel. Mm-hmm. They did. And they did a great job. And it's so convincing because he's not shooting at a camera. He's shooting at a person. There's so much more action and so much more liveliness to the way that he does it. Purely, not necessarily if you put him side by side, but because of the context of the scene. Mm-hmm. And that is so brilliant that they did that. That was, I think, the perfect way to introduce a new Bond. Don't try to copy paste. Make your own thing. Take that risk.
It kept it familiar, but making it fresh in its own way.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just on that note, if you think about it, every time, every gun barrel ever that Bond turns and shoots, yes, we know the context of the shot in this regard. He's shooting that guy. But if you think about it, in every gun barrel, he's shooting somebody. There's a blood dribble.
Oh, you think?
let me explain this to you, Margo.
Ah, finally, I see the light.
Yes.
No, like, of course, but the thing is, when you actually see the guy getting his head rammed through a ceramic sink, youch, and getting actually drowned, and you're watching this guy, and the look that Daniel Craig has on his face while he's like holding him down is almost like he's thinking about where he put his keys for a second. You know, he kind of like looks up for a second. He's like, where'd I put him? Oh, yeah. Back to business. Like, it's so, the character's set. He has a license to kill. He's going to do it. And he's okay with it. He's, you know, it's part of the job. And it works so well because you're actively seeing him do it. So when you see him shoot it, you're like, oh, he killed that guy. He didn't just kill a guy. He killed that guy. Yeah. You have a face. You have a name, if you can remember it. I can't. But
you know my name.
What is that? Oh.
The theme song.
So dumb. I'm sorry. I'm like, what is that?
Yeah. So to go from my perspective, someone who didn't want to like this movie, I was 15 years old, didn't want to like it purely because I was like, that's not my Bond. To within the opening 3 minutes to be fully on board and be like, holy shit, this is going to be amazing. To go into that opening theme too is wild.
I believe they call that hook, line, sinker.
And I
smooth.
And they got me. But like, what I was going to say is like, to go from that to like hate, not hating it, wanting to hate it, to here we are like 20 some years later.
Mm-hmm.
When No Time to Die was coming out, they re-released a bunch of Daniel Craig films, Bond films, in theaters. And I went and saw Casino Royale again. And just having that thought of like, oh, this is my first Bond film I got to see on the big screen. Here I am seeing it again. And, you know, he goes to pull up that gun off the floor and the henchman kind of like wakes up and Bond turns and da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Oh, so good.
I cried. I cried.
Like, you did?
Oh, yeah. I was overwhelmed with the plappy and he turns a plap.
I'm disappointed that I didn't notice that. I should be on call
You weren't in the theater with me when
in the theater. Morgo.
Yeah, okay. This isn't every time I watch it.
I wouldn't be surprised with you, you know? Yeah. Oh, that makes sense then. Absolved. Yeah. And then, I mean, the opening credits. Oh, man. Mm-hmm. Did they do a good job with that? Everything about it. They really, it's so funny because you can still see that early 2000s, right?
When mid 2006.
Yeah, so early. When we're speaking about the millennium. Okay. 2006, early 2000s. There is a point in the actual,
Animation.
Yeah, thank you. Where there's like a bunch of, what do you call them? Like ellipses or whatever. They're all kind of like into each other. Mm-hmm. It reminded me of like a lot of those old computer screensavers, with class, you know? So there's a nostalgic effect to it where I'm like, I remember like listening to Shakira and putting on the iTunes, like, you know, like flashes of light or whatever. And, you know how they used to do that?
Yeah.
Cool. I don't know. You looked away. I was like, oh, do you not remember this?
No, I'm just thinking about
this iconic moment in music history.
No, I was going to ask, like, how do you feel about the choice to make, like, all these characters in that opening title sequence? They're all very, like, edged, blockish it's, almost. It was a choice because there was animation, you know, that was superior to that at the mm-hmm. time. It was definitely a choice to make it like, I don't know, kind of like edges of a card or something. Yeah. Or
I also did say
something not smoothed out. You mm-hmm. know, he's rough around the edges.
It. I'm guessing that's why you like it, because it implies rough around the edges. Also, just a second ago, I said, oh, it fits the seam because I meant the theme. So the, I mean, it was also kind of a trend in Mad Men do that. And it was around that maybe. Time where there's like that, I don't know what the influence is really, but like there's just a lot of that like paper cut, Saul Bass-ish attributes to it. And I think they were just trying to touch on the handmade nature of like most Bond opening themes. That's the thing. Like they, a lot of them, the majority of them at that point didn't have like special effects. It was like playing with light and, you know, making things with your hands, or with your hands, idiot, with not using digital art. That's what I mean. And it's kind of acting as that transition. And I think it was incredibly intentional in that manner, because I really think they knew that like people were going to come in with like certain expectations. It's a Bond film. There's an angry mob outside, maybe, you know what I mean? They got to find that balance. And you know, you're talking about a casino, you're talking about elegance, you're talking about prestige and tradition to a certain extent. And I think they wanted to honor that. So I think that's what they were going for, but I could be wrong.
This was the 21st Bond film, and it was the first Bond film since Dr. No, the very first one, to not have either scantily clad or like partially nude women dancing around.
Oh, that's right. It was just fighting.
Yeah, fighting.
Really
and cards.
Cool choreography too. Yeah, fighting and cards. And every time there was any kind of blood spill, I think it was also to kind of so keep cool. everything on the same plane. You know, I mean, there is a lot of dimension that they're playing with, but it's, you know, like you can't have one thing dominating over the other. And I think that if they went a different route, it just they might have at first started doing that, and then they were like, it just doesn't fit. It doesn't. There's no cohesion in that. So yeah. I really do think that it was just a matter of keeping things consistent within the intro and with the past, with everything that's been done.
Yeah. And as you were kind of touching on, it is really cool whenever they like shoot the gun and the smoke that comes out or the blood and things like that. It's just like card suits, you know.
Oh, it's so
like
cool.
Like clubs.
And even
for the
like
smoke.
The patterns in the back and stuff, it's just they were like multiplying them. And, you know, I mean, I wasn't wearing my glasses for like a second and I was like, whoa, so cool. And I put my glasses on and I was like, whoa, even cooler. Like it's that idea of like, oh, what is that called? Graphic resonance. From far away, it looks like something different. And as you get closer, it turns into something else. You know, there's something dynamic about it. And even though the things were moving around, hence dynamicism, they even in like a still shot, you had so much going on. It gave you so much to look at, and there's so much more to discover. Like you get you're far away, you see one thing, you get closer, you see something else. It's I think it's up there for one of the best.
It's my personal favorite.
Nice.
And you'll hear that a lot throughout this movie. For me, this is, I mentioned the GoldenEye episode for a long time. Casino Royale battled for my second favorite Bond movie between that and GoldenEye. And now they've kind of flip-flopped where GoldenEye is my favorite, but Casino Royale is definitely my number two. Definitely required viewing in my opinion, but we'll get to that later. This opening title sequence, my favorite like visual opening title sequence of all the Bond movies, and my favorite intro theme song, which is interesting for me to say, maybe not as a fan, maybe a lot of fans feel that way. I've never really heard it, but like, you know, this great catalog of Bond songs, you got like Goldfinger and what else is another good classic one? Thunderball, Tom Jones' Thunderball, or even Live and Let Die. Mm-hmm. You know, all these great classic themes.
GoldenEye. Did you just say GoldenEye?
No, I said Goldfinger.
Okay.
And Live and Let Die. But yeah, it for me, You Know My Name by Chris Cornell, David Arnold, who also wrote the song and worked on it with Chris Cornell, David Arnold, had done so many of the Bond films. He worked on GoldenEye, but he did Tomorrow Never Dies, World Is Not Enough, Die Another Day. So here he is coming back. He is so on the pulse, in my mind, of James Bond music that, like, he was able to just curate what this new Bond was going to be and what this new movie was going to be.
Yeah.
And
the song itself sets the tone beautifully. Yeah. If you just heard it, you wouldn't think, oh, hey, Bond theme. But everything about it, the synergy with the animation and going into the movie, how, like, fast-paced it is, it's just, like, it makes total sense. And I think there was a little bit of brass in there, too, or am I making that up? Oh, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, it's in there. And, you know, the theme song is woven into the score of the movie, too, and it's awesome.
Brilliantly so. And it's like, I think we've mentioned this before, but you pay attention to scores a lot more than I do. I didn't, you know, that's the thing. It's not something that, like, stands out to me right off the bat. But that, at one point, I think there was a car pulling in somewhere in the movie, and I heard it in, like, an orchestra manner, whatever, I don't know, music. And I was like, I was about to, like, poke you and be like, that's the music, that's the music. And I was like, you know what? He knows. He knows, and it was probably not the first time, but it's the first time I noticed, so...
It's really good, and once again, like, this might be my favorite score of a Bond film, because there's certain tracks that just get me in my little heartstrings, but I don't know. I'm a sucker for GoldenEye. I really am. That score that no one likes. hell yeah.
Knocking on a submarine.
You kind of touched on this with the opening title, where it's like new but paying homage to, you know, the classics or the ones that came before it. I feel like that is what's brilliant about this movie, is because it does that throughout the whole film. It's new, it's different, it's regarded, especially at the time, of taking Bond in a different direction and being more on the emotional side, more dramatic side of James Bond, but it still fits, like, a lot of the tropes, a lot of the almost the requirements of a Bond film, where Bond has to bed two women, there has to be a femme fatale or something like that, and
she's gotta go. One of those femme fatales needs to die a very not fun death.
Someone's gotta die.
Early in the movie, too, and you're like, ah, man, she was a good soul.
Yeah, Bond drinks martinis, and there's action, and like those typical things. But, you know, it has the villain with some deformity or whatever.
Yeah,
all those things. But
it was subtle in this one. Sorry, we'll get to that.
Well, yeah, as what I'm saying is, like, they're all there, but it is subtle and it is different. Like,
tasteful,
yes,
I
it's
would
more
say.
Tasteful. Sure. Like, does Bond bed two women in this movie? No, he doesn't. But he, you know, definitely seduces.
Champagne and caviar for two? No, for one. Clink. I'll never get it right. I don't care. It's fine. There's the pace of the movie is established early on. I mean, that whole chase scene and the wit of James Bond, the impulsiveness, but the cockiness and his interactions with them. Like, when he, when there's, like, the mongoose and the cobra fight, or whatever that was, when he's, like, talking to the other agent, he's like, take your hand off your ear, or whatever. That was the worst impression I could have done. But, boom, right then and there. It's like, oh, he thinks of those little details. And then, like, the chase scene happens and the clumsy other guy falls into the pit. Oh, no. And, you know, you know, that was kind of a cheap giveaway of, like, look how much better Bond is. But you know what? I'll eat that up.
But in the same regard, you know, Bond is an incredible chase scene. I would also throw, in my opinion, I'd throw that in to one of the best chase scenes in any movie. And I'm talking any chase. That means cars, bicycles, feet.
Rollerblades.
Yeah. Rocket ships. Like, it doesn't matter. I think it's up there.
Boats. How many things can we list?
Yeah. Anyway, I was going to start naming other things, but I'm like, that's not important. What is important is they set up You already kind of got the mentality of Bond at the beginning, but what's going to be the physical nature of Daniel Craig's run as James Bond? And you get that in this chase scene.
Mm-hmm. He doesn't fight like he's in a bar fight. That's well, for sure.
I don't know. He kind of does because he, you know, the guy he's chasing is very agile. He's doing that parkour, very smooth.
Mm-hmm.
Bond is like, for example, dude hops a fence in elegant fashion, parkour excellence. Mm-hmm. Bond gets in a bulldozer and just plows that sucker
over.
Yeah,
but he's what do you call it? Resourceful. He's not going to want to get hurt. He doesn't want to be caught in the crossfire. He knows that the guy has a gun. He knows the guy probably has a bomb. There's certain things that, like, he's thinking 10 steps ahead of the guy, but also he doesn't want to die. It's not, oh, how can I protect others? He doesn't give a shit about that. It's, how do I get this guy? And I think it's not necessarily like, because he climbed a crane, you know what I mean? Like, in a cool way, too. Like, the guy actually went, like, duk, 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 like, up the crane,
yeah, the
post,
beam, the beam, yeah, the steel beam.
Surprise, I don't know construction either. But then he does this cool thing with like the wire or the cable, and he like kicks something and goes like all the way up, and it does a really cool sound too. Mm-hmm. And he like tonks his way up there, and then he does hesitate to do certain jumps and everything. The guy's just kind of fucking bolting it.
Mm-hmm.
But he has to keep up, and he knows that, and he's doing it. And even though there is hesitance, it's not necessarily that he's scared. It's he just doesn't know how to do it.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Yeah,
it's
sure.
Based in, oh, I've never done this. Oh, well, let's do it. You know, there's that go-getter attitude that Bond
yeah,
has.
And, you know, to that point, and I guess the point I'm trying to make is, you know, the villain is running. He's doing his parkour stuff. He jumps, like, through a little... like a little slot and mm-hmm. slides right through it, where Bond just this plows right through right. the drive wall. Poosh!
Yeah.
And what I'm getting at is, M says it, he's a blunt instrument.
Ah, oh, that's good. Also, M. Yes. Oh my God. I'm so glad they kept her on.
Me too. You know, yeah. I was pleasantly surprised and confused as a young fan because this was set up like, this is Bond's first mission. So you're supposed to kind of think like all the Bond movies are like connected, right?
Because mm-hmm.
there's a lot of overlap and characters and callbacks to things. But, you know, the actor of Bond changes. So Pierce Brosnan was the previous Bond and Judi Dench was the M. Well, this is a prequel. This is like Bond's first mission as a 00.
Mm-hmm.
And M is Judi Dench again. So...
but,
as an adult, I don't care. Like, it doesn't matter. And essentially, it is like a reboot anyway.
But I think that was really smart on their end because, again, maintaining that consistency of, like, the expectation for a Bond. Mm-hmm. You know? Like, Q was around for how long? Moneypenny?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, and they're just like, nope, this is the same Bond. Hi, Bond. How are you? Mm-hmm. You know? Like, it continues. And that's something that I think is really well done that they took advantage of, first off. And it just makes sense. They saw how good Dame Judi Dench was as M.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were like, okay, well, we gotta keep her on. And, it, you know, that's something that I think they did intentionally.
Mm-hmm.
Not just because she was great, but because they could. Because that's like that's perfectly acceptable in the Bond community. Like, that's totally good to do. And I think it's just showing that respect, that homage to the fact that this isn't like a new Bond film for the new era. This is new Bond film as part of that mm-hmm. world. And the whole creative aspect of it, everything. I just think they knew what they were doing in that. Well, obviously they knew what they were doing. But we're in an attic, you know, what the hell do we know? But I really do think it was intentional. I think it was brilliantly done too.
With all these things that are new about this take of James Bond and this, like, the different direction they were taking, I am very happy that they kept some consistency mm-hmm. in that regard, some familiarity.
And in the relationship, too, the way she talks to him, very similar to how she talked to Pierce Brosnan's mm-hmm. Bond. I think the actual relationship was maintained. It wasn't just, you're with a new Bond. It's, you're with Bond. Remember how much he pisses you off and how you, what was it? Like,
you have a bloody cheek.
Like, what was it? If I wanted to hear sarcasm, I'd talk to my children. Like, that whole thing, like, that's awesome. They kept that in. And it's like she just picked up right where she left off. I think mm-hmm. that was mm-hmm. really well done. The writing was brilliant. For her specifically, but also just throughout the movie, they really pulled it off.
Yeah, they did. And I'm glad they build on M and Bond's relationship in this movie, whereas in previous ones, well, most of them, Bond or M is their purpose is really just to kind of drive the plot. Like, mm-hmm. oh, what do you know about Gold 007? And then he sends him on the mission, and that's really all you see of M. Like the inciting incident, almost. Like, mm-hmm. here's the mission, go do it. Every now and then, M has a little bit more to do with Bond. But Judi Dench is run with the character, definitely builds more on that relationship, especially starting here. And obviously through Daniel Craig's run up until Casino Royale, or sorry, Skyfall. So yeah, that's a good call out. I wasn't thinking of even mentioning Judi Dench coming back as M, but yeah, that is so.
Yeah, she looks great doing it too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Those gorgeous blue eyes.
Yeah.
What do you think of some of the other characters in this movie? Let's chat about the main Bond girl of Vesper.
I don't know. As an actress, she was great. Here's my thing, and this is such a surface level thing to worry about. The costumes and the way they dressed her and everything, so very early 2000s, very heavy on the makeup. And she was great. I really did like the character. But then they put her in all these like boat neck, cowl neck, deep plunge dresses, and like this is just me scratching this, just like objectively looking at it, and just like the character in itself, like that purple dress he puts her in, and we'll get to that scene too, because that was just a really great like establishment of like relationship, but he puts her in that dress, and then he's like, I just want everybody to like, you know, be so distracted by your neckline that they don't see that I'm, I don't know, fucking shooting someone. And she walks in, and I'm like, eh. You know, like, I'm like, she's beautiful. She's gorgeous. But her dress is like, I don't know, about it.
That's so funny that you say that, because in the Bond community, that dress in particular is like an iconic was look.
Like, wowie, like hubba hubba.
Well, I guess so.
Ooga, like eyes popping out of your.
I guess so. You know, it's part of a great scene. And it's like, I don't know if like people like, I don't know, if whipped up a picture of Vesper, it'd probably be that.
Yeah, and I mean, no, that's the thing. It's become iconic, obviously, for the context of the scene, the way that it's been done. But it could have been any other dress, in my opinion, and that dress would have become iconic. It just, I don't know. So that was just more like costume stuff and like all that. But as a character, I thought she was really impressive. Just that first quip with Bond, their introduction and everything, you know, you're like, ooh la la, she's handsome. Okay, no, she's
handsome and he's pretty.
Yeah, she's hot. So, you know, she comes in and like fiery tongue and la 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 la, and then he's like ma 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 ma, and then they do a whole thing and he shoots her that look when she walks away. But then there's like tension in the relationship, but like just out of like,
because they don't agree with each other's methods.
Yeah, either. it's cute. That's the most dismissive way I could have phrased that. It's believable because it's not actual a point of tension. It's like, ooh, tension, you know, like how are they going to, because from there, this is what I'm trying to say. From that tension, they can show that they actually care for each other. It's nothing like, you know, she found him in bed with another woman and was like, oh, you're at it again, Bond. And then turned around and be like, oh, you sure you want to, you know, but it's a very interpersonal relationship. It's built. It's actually like there's a crescendo to it, and there's like anticipation, and there's this and that. Like it's a really, really beautiful relationship. And Vesper as like a character, really effective. Mm-hmm. Works really, really well. She's, and the actress, what's her name?
Eva Green.
Super convincing.
Oh yeah.
So good. Oh my God. Just there's no overdoing it. You know, there's actual like, you know, a lot of the times, like I feel like in some Bond films, a lot of time in some Bond films, good job, Margo, there's you know, the Bond girl will be like, ugh, I don't like you, but I know I'm sexy, you know, like it's a little on the nose, but she knows she's hot, and she's like, yeah, I'm hot, and then she still does her own thing. Like that's, there's what do you call it? Autonomy in the character, and I think that's incredibly valuable, and it's very effective.
I am the money. Every penny of it.
Oh, yeah. Oh my God. That's so good.
Yeah, their back and forth is like, I don't know, the potatoes of that steak dinner. That is their relationship, because they have their little back and forths and just like able to analyze each other.
Yeah.
And not only that, but measure each other up. You know, he buys her the dress. Well, she gets a tailored suit for him just by eyeing up his measurements.
And literally just like right after he gets her the dress. Not even like sometimes 12 hours later. Like none of that. It was just like boom, boom. That's the nature of their relationship. It's like bomb, 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 bomb. Like they're trying to they're always one-upping each other and they're trying to keep up with the other. It's really, really cool to see. And it's so cool to see the point where they start building that romantic relationship. Because it's not just drop of a hat. It like something traumatic happens and she's sitting in the shower crying, which okay, like, you know. She can get undressed, but that's just me being shitty.
You know, in the original script, it did call for that. She was going to be in the shower naked, but Daniel Craig interjected. He's like, no, Vesper, she would be so upset. She's so in her head doing that. She wouldn't have even considered taking her dress off.
Okay. I disagree with him, but whatever. I think Eva should have made that last call. I'm sure she was like, yeah, you're right, you know.
It's such an iconic scene. I think it's perfect.
My dumbass with my OCD is like, but if I get my clothes wet, then I'm gonna be uncomfortable later. Like, it's like, obviously I have never been in a circumstance as such, you know, so like
yeah. But you know, speaking of that scene, and I think it's classic and perfect as it is, that kind of touches on something that isn't too common with Bond and the Bond girl and like the love interests in all these movies. Not common is an emotional arc. Usually it's just like a romantic arc or a lustful arc, but this is an emotional one. So these characters go through peaks and valleys with what they're dealing with. As opposed to like Bond needs info or resources from said Bond girl. She gets captured, Bond saves her, and they shag.
But that also sets up the rest of the movies for like a callous-hearted Bond, because it's like he is letting himself be vulnerable. This is his first quote-unquote mission, not really, but you know what I mean.
But his first love.
Yeah, and the level of vulnerability that he shows is like, it's apparent. And when that's taken away from him, it sets up the tone for the rest of the film. So then it does make sense, you know, going forward when he's just like shagging about, you know?
Yeah.
So, excuse me. It's a beautiful relationship.
He puts that armor back on, you know?
Yeah, that's right. Or was it ever there? Yeah. The first Bond girl, the oldest one in history. Or whatever. No, that am I thinking of a different? Oh, I'm thinking of a different
movie. Well, I don't even know what you're talking about.
The one who gets hammocked.
Oh, okay.
I'm thinking of a different one, aren't I?
No, that's in this one.
That's her? She's the oldest one?
Oh, I'm confused with what you're saying.
Okay, because the oldest age-wise? Yes.
No, that's Inspector, but no, that's Monica Bellucci.
Okay, my bad.
Inspector. Cool. I think she was like in her 50 or in her 50s.
Gotcha.
I thought you meant like the oldest Bond girl. I'm like, that's Honey Rider from Dr. No.
She, hubba hubba, my God.
I'll never forget this. I'm glad you said that. We, you know, went to the cinema and saw it. You know, my brother, my father, my mother, we went and saw it. And I remember my dad being like, that girl they picked to be the main Bond girl, Vesper, like, they messed up. They should have switched them. Like, that girl from the Bahamas, she, holy shit, she should have been the main Bond girl.
Your dad has a type.
Yeah, apparently.
That's awesome.
Apparently.
That was the loudest whistle laugh I could have done. I'm straight into the mic.
You know what? You know, sure, funny. Sure, she is hubba hubba, but hubba hubba, James Bond, Daniel Craig coming out of the water, and that little number, that little blue number.
I like that you remember that, and I don't.
I've looked at it many a time.
Yeah. Oh, I know. Oh, like when he's like,
coming out
like
of the water.
I'm just minding my business over here, and then there's like water dripping down his fucking hot butt, and you know. I need a minute. No. It's yeah, I mean, you know, he's a charmer. He knows what he looks like. And that was the whole point. He knew this dude, the sociopath who's married to this woman, is probably not good to her, so let me charm her. She probably knows stuff. As much as a location, like, or as little as a location, you know? Mm-hmm. And yeah, he definitely used her, and she died because of him. And I'm sure that probably struck him a little bitty bit.
Yeah, I mean, that's just going to carry on throughout his career. Like,
yeah. How little does he know.
how many people need to die because of him? Mm-hmm. But, you know, they're talking about Daniel Craig. We mentioned in the beginning, a lot of people were, like, against this guy being James Bond just because of how he looked. Well, a paparazzi photo of that day where he comes out of the water and he had been, you know, he put on 20 pounds of muscle to play this role.
Nice.
And that image got leaked and everyone's like, never mind, this guy is, yeah, nice. This guy means business.
That's all it takes. That's funny. Yeah. Oh, the public.
Yep.
We're so easily, like, manipulated.
We're going to go check this out now.
Okay, I'll give it a chance.
And, you know, despite all that stuff, it is a cool callback too. It is a callback to Dr. No, and as we just mentioned, Honey Rider, her coming out of the ocean in that little white bikini, mm-hmm. you know, searching for shells.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a callback to that iconic scene.
That's awesome.
But it's Daniel Craig coming out and the same objectification.
Yeah, yeah. Got him. Yeah. Yeah, it's cool. Sorry. That's the dumbest thing I could say. Sorry.
And I'm going to transition because, you know, Bond's going on this mission. He needs the aid of Solange, who, you know, dies because of what the info he needs. Mm-hmm. You know, Vesper's getting involved because she's like this accountant who's going to fund this card game at mm-hmm. the Casino Royale. But why are we doing all this? Well, it's because of this bad guy. How do you say it proper?
Le chiffre. Le chiffre.
Chiffre.
Yeah, what did you ask me? You're like, that means Saturday, right? Or what was it?
I said, does that mean the hand?
The hand, yeah. No, it means the number.
The number.
The number. Le chiffre, I think. I mean, okay, here's the thing. There's probably an expression I'm not aware of. And then when you say, like, oh, le chiffre, it actually means, like, the tissue or something. I mean, it doesn't, but you know.
I'm sure you're right, because it makes sense, because he is, like, you know, a genius with numbers, and he's, like, this, like, crazy accountant guy also.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
That's the thing. I'm fluent, but I'm, like, I'm probably wrong. It's like, well,
most of my life, I say le chiffre.
Yeah.
But it's le chiffre.
I think the reason why you said that it was the hand is because in that script you wrote, script, you were like la mano or la main or something like, la main mort or something like that.
Yeah, whatever.
Whatever it was.
I wrote a script once and the villain was called the hand, but I wrote it all in French.
We'll do a reading when my family comes to visit. Yeah. They all get a role. Oh, we should do that. All right. We'll
put a pin in that.
Yeah, there you go.
So le chiffre. Yeah. How does he stack up for you as far as Bond baddies go?
What's the actor's name? I always forget. Mads
Mikkelsen.
Mads Mikkelsen. So good. Oh, he's so good. He's so stoic. He's so callous. He's so, like, he knows what he's doing and he's 10 steps ahead of it. There's, like, you see a lot of this. It's not like, mwahaha, I poisoned the water system. Evil. It's like, manipulative, conniving, and he still shows emotion. Mm-hmm. Like, he's still vulnerable, but yeah. not in like he's like, oh, I love kittens, like none of that, but like, I, you know, like when he's like, I've got the money, I've got the, like, he's scared, he knows what's coming,
he's desperate. Yeah. And that makes him dangerous.
Yeah. And, ooh. And well said.
He's very scary because he is powerful. As a character, he's powerful, mm-hmm. and yeah, he has lost it all, and he's desperate to get it back by any means necessary.
Literally, the embodiment of desperate times calls for desperate measures.
Yeah, he takes money. He funds terrorism. He takes,
you know, as one does.
Yeah, he takes money from terrorists and uses that to hire and fund terrorist attacks. Well, he takes all the money and uses it on the stock market and, like, I guess whatever, bets against this airline that these terrorists are planning to attack. So he bets against it. So when the stocks go down, he, you know, he can sell and make a lot of money. Well, Bond thwarts that.
Oh, see, I didn't,
you didn't catch all that.
I didn't catch that at all.
Bond thwarts that, and the terrorist attack doesn't happen, and Le Chiffre loses all of that money. So,
real quick, just on a side note, this is why Bond films are great for novice viewers too. Like, anybody can watch them. I know that we'll get to the final verdict, but I missed all that, and I was still like, he's a bad guy. Like, that's all it was. That's all it took. He's just bad guy. Like, that's it. Bond, good guy. Mods, bad guy. And that's it. That's all you need to follow the movie. I guess that's kind of a spoiler of how I feel about it. But anyways, sorry. Whoopsie
daisy. But yeah, he... So to get the money back and I guess in the best way he can is he's I don't know if he's a card shark, but he's brilliant with cards and he's an incredible poker player. So he is going to play this game at the Casino Royale and more than likely win because of his skills. So that's where James Bond comes in because he's the best player in MI6. And, you know, wherever Vesper's involved with, she is helping to fund this operation on Bond's behalf. So all the chips are lining up, so to say,
nice,
at Casino Royale in Montenegro. And there's other characters that get involved, like Mathis, who is like an informant for Bond.
I always appreciate two-faced individual, the sneaky deaky guy.
Is that how you feel about Mathis?
Yeah.
Because it turns out your friend Mathis is actually my friend Mathis.
That's right. As soon as he said that, I was like, oh, that's good stuff.
And he knows...
I'm going to say that about my friends under no context.
Spoiler alert. I'm feeling you might not have picked that up. Mathis wasn't a two-faced guy.
Yeah, I didn't pick that up.
he didn't betray Bond.
I knew it was at the end. They were like, oh, maybe it wasn't Mathis. And in my mind, I was like, it was Mathis. Like, it was still Mathis. He still did it.
It's Vesper.
Yeah. I put those pieces together, but I was like, I think it's still Mathis a little bit.
Yeah, he was in on it, too.
Yeah.
They do address that in Quantum of Solace, the next film. So when we watch that, I'll be like, Hey.
Yeah, pay attention. Like, and I'll be like,
Leo.
I don't have my glasses on.
And Once Upon a Time.
Yeah. I will say Poker Game. On that note, I didn't know that Bond was the best player on MI6. I love that that's how they decided, like, put him on. Like, he gambles. Like, okay. But I saw on Instagram, there was like this little, like, you know, interview with Mads Mikkelsen where he was talking about poker and that scene. He was saying, like, oh, the hands were outrageous, but they had to be, you know, the hands they were getting were like unbelievable, but they had to do it so the audience would understand the stakes and could follow to a certain extent. And he was like, the only person at the table who didn't know how to play poker. We all knew how to play poker except for Daniel. And when I saw that before I watched Casino Royale, so watching him play, I was like, damn it, that took the magic away. Because to me, I didn't go in thinking Bond is so good at poker. I was thinking, like, damn, Daniel, like, sucks to be you, dude. But
he's acting, you see.
Yeah, no, I don't think he is.
He's like, I'm a really bad poker player, but I'm acting like I'm a good one. And look, I won the damn game.
Yeah. He's so good. Yeah, so that kind of took me out of it. But, I mean, just the tension in the scene. Oh, this is what else? This is the other thing that I didn't really like. His tell. Le Chiffre's tell. Le Chiffre. I'm just going to say it like that. Le Chiffre's tell. Like, he rubs his eye violently. I found it. Like, well, yeah, dude, it's pretty freaking obvious. It's, like, right there.
See that bloody tear duct he has? He's crying blood? It's because he rubs his eye too much.
No, but, you know, like, he literally brings his hand up and he, like, strokes the side of his eye, like, Like, I'm like, dude, duh. Like, I could have told you that. But, again, it's for the public. It's for the audience. They need to be, like... Oh, that was the tell. Like, I'm smart like Bond, you know, like me, like how I felt when I was like, aha, I saw his tell. Yeah. I'm better than Bond. Fun story. One time, so my sister, my oldest sister, she taught me how to play poker. I forgot all of it, but she taught me, and I think I was like 8 when we were playing. And you know the odds of getting a royal flush? You know what the odds are? Yeah, I got one. I got a royal flush at 8 years old. So there goes my entire, like, I'm never going to get one. At least someone who's never gotten one, there's still a chance. I already got it. That's why I already got my, at 8 years old. We were playing with washers. Like, we didn't have enough chips, so my dad would just give us washers to gamble with. That was that. So
that's why when we play the lottery, we play with your numbers.
That's right. And I'm not telling them. Anyways.
And you know, if you think about it, like, watching a poker game in a movie should be boring. But this is a high-stakes poker game. And one, I was going to say, they break it up with action, but my favorite parts of this movie are them at that poker table.
Oh, yeah.
It's so intense. There's so much on the line, and the chemistry of all the characters involved, the main characters.
They're all different characters. They're all very different physically and, like, in, like, the way they handle themselves. Oh, a really great moment was when Bond was like, make me a drink, like, and he like describes, mm-hmm. I think it was the Vesper, right?
Yeah.
And then the two guys are like, I'll have one too. Like, I thought that was really clever, like, just that kind of idea of, like, they're all just kind of like, man, I'm just playing poker. Yeah. I'll have a drink. Yeah, give me one of those, you know?
Yeah, everyone's like, yeah, I'll have one. Hey, keep the fruit and all that stuff. Like, yeah. Everyone's ordering, and Lashif's like, are we done? Can we play poker now?
Yeah.
Like, I need to get out of here. I need to win the game.
It's so cool. It sets the tone brilliantly. Like, where are the stakes? Who's there just to play, and who's there with sinister intentions, you know?
And, you know, to make a Vesper nowadays, it's like 2 measures of Gordon's, which is gin, a measure of vodka, half a measure of Lillet Blanc.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another.
Well said.
There's another ingredient that they just don't make anymore. But you essentially just need those ingredients. Put a lemon twist in there, and you got a very strong drink. But damn it, they're tasty.
Yeah, that Lillet or whatever is. Lillet Blanc. Yeah, yeah, it's very tasty too. You tell me I'm not allowed to drink it by itself because it's. You're like, no, it's for the Vesper or something.
Yeah, you know, there's this bar here in Pittsburgh, and I don't know if they serve it anymore, but the owner of the bar, he like created his version of a Vesper. It's all that.
Yeah, I remember you got one, right?
Oh, I got it a couple times. It's so good. And instead of putting like the lemon twist in there or olives or whatever the hell, he would put in like some kind of saline solution, but he'd also put in like a droplet of squid ink.
Yeah, and it goes poof.
Yeah.
Into the water. Yeah.
He's like, I kind of did
into
that.
Into the
to,
water. Wait.
He said he did it to look like the gun smoke or something so from the cool. barrel. I'm like, relax. It looks more like the Spectre squid ink or something.
That's cool. It was really cool because he did it like in front of you too. He went boop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You're like, more.
it was really cool. Mm-hmm. But you get that iconic moment. And that's what I was going to say. You get this like really high stakes poker game that should be boring, but they set the tone for it. And it's very intense, but it's broken up with some really cool action. There's, you know, a fight in a staircase that's very intense, very brutal. And then there's a scene where Bond gets poisoned and he's dying and, you know, has to resuscitate himself. And there's drama there and Vesper makes the save and, increases their care for each other.
Oh, yeah. When he asks her, are you okay? She's like, am I okay?
Yeah. You're not seriously going in there.
They play the macho thing. They play the macho thing really well, too. Because mm-hmm. he's not putting down. Well, sometimes he is. But, like, you know, he's not intentionally putting down women to bring himself up. He's just macho. Like, are you okay? He's like, I just can resuscitated you. Yeah, I'm fine. Yeah. How are you? Let me take your pulse, you know? It's done in an elegant manner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you get introduced shortly after to another iconic Bond character, newly played by, what's his name? Jeffrey Wright. Felix Leiter.
He played Commissioner Gordon. Yeah, I like stopped. I was like, Commissioner Gordon. You're yes, good job, Margo. Yeah, he's cool. I like that they just kind of slipped him in there. Mm-hmm. He was a presence. He was useful to a certain extent.
He refunded Bond to get back into the game.
Oh, Margo, I missed so many things during the movie. So Bond's lost. There's a lot going on, you know.
Bond loses, and you know, Lashif's gonna win and go on funding terrorism.
What does Felix say to him? Like, oh, it looks like we're on the same team, or something like that. What was it?
My brother from Langley, Felix Leiter, CIA. He's like, I'm bleeding chips. I'll spot you the 10 million or something.
That's so good.
And he's like, I can't remember. Oh, he's like, if you beat him, what happens to the winnings? And Felix is like, does it look like we need the money?
USA, like USA, USA.
So, you know, Felix is throughout the Bond series, here and there, whether he's an important character or not. He's not necessarily always memorable. There's some memorable scenes that happen to Felix throughout the series. But Jeffrey Wright is my favorite Felix. And I wish they used him more. Because I could have seen, like, Bond and Felix go on, like, an adventure, like, mm-hmm. together. And they road trip and snuggle.
Like the bro comedy. Like, what is that called? Buddy comedy.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. And, you know, they touch on their friendship so much in No Time to Die.
Yeah.
But we don't get to see it. You know, he's in Casino Royale. He's in Quantum of Solace. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't come back until No Time to Die. And they like, regale, like, old times, Bond, like the good old days. Yeah. But we never got to see them.
I can't remember. Do they do
snuggle?
Do they do that thing where they're like, hey, remember that time in Cabo? Huh? Don't get me started. Anyways, you know, does that happen? Because I can't quite kind of remember.
Yeah, it kind of does.
Cheap.
Yeah, I wish we would have got more of that, but yeah. It's effective. His portrayal is Felix's presence is Felix.
So he like palms him like a friendship bracelet. Anyways, I'm done with jokes. It's a really cool introduction of the character. Really, again, well portrayed. Like, he's just like, I swear he says something about this, like, oh, it looks like we're playing on the same team or something like that. Yeah. He's just as fast as Bond, which I like.
Yeah, so
he's
very, bah, 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 bah. Bond's getting that knife and he's gonna go kill Lashif, and like, Bond passes him and he grabs him by the arm. He's like, looks like we're on the same side.
Yeah, there we go. Oh, thank you. Okay, that was
killing me. I think that's
me.
What he says, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
You're right.
Very cool.
You know, throughout this, as we mentioned before, Lashif's a desperate man. How did you feel of the torture scene?
At first, I was nervous, and then I got a giggle out of it.
It's funny, but it's one of those, like, you're so tense, it's funny, but he says some really funny stuff.
He does, yeah. There's, like, a really good comedic delivery under the circumstances, you know? You know, that when he throws Vesper into that... hole, whatever you want to call it, you know, he's like, ah, and then his henchman goes in there and you're like, oh god, no, oh lord Christ, don't touch her, don't be mean to her, she's good. And
a
then
hole?
You know, the door, the, oh, the little room, whatever you want, okay, to call it, yeah, room.
I'm like, I don't remember her getting thrown in a hole.
She goes, ah, splash.
Oh, that's like, that's at the end of the movie. But, yeah, sure, you know, who knows, yeah, what's happening, but, you know.
Yeah, you can kind of hush, I don't know. It's just, that makes me, you know, I mean, it's like, you see that happening. You're like, oh, God, I don't want to hear it, And then they strip Daniel Craig down, and when he's cutting that hole in the chair, like, I knew what was coming, but I do remember seeing that for the first time. I was like, well, that's not going to hold him very well. Like, and then he did the thing with the balls, and I was like, oh, I got it. I'm all caught up, guys.
Like, what I find, like, artistically beautiful about all this is at the beginning, where he comes out of the water and that little blue number, and he's, like, all confident and sexy, and, mm-hmm. like, you have that portrayal, but then at the end, when he's almost equally as naked, mm-hmm. and he's just stripped down to nothing, and he's completely, yeah. vulnerable and getting the hell beat out of him. It's just the stark contrasts of like your decisions have led you here kind of thing.
And it's crazy because like the way that it's, he's actually sitting in that chair, he's like curled up, he's in like a fetal position. There's so much vulnerability to like every single detail of that scene. Mm-hmm. His girl is in a different room. He can't see her. He can't even see her. He has no idea what's being done to her. He's dick ass naked and his balls are hanging out. Okay, there's no elegant way of saying that.
That's what's happening.
I'm sure there is, but you know me. And him like waving the rope around, you're like, that's not gonna do too much to him. That's not gonna hurt. And then he goes bah, like straight for it, and you're like, oh yeah. Yeah, I don't even have any, and I could feel that. So.
Made you feel it, did he? Yeah, and
but that's not the funny part, obviously.
I got an itch down there.
That's so good.
Do you mind? You're a funny man, Mr. Bond.
That's so good. The quips keep going, because the thing is, they could have never done that in the old movies, but anytime Bond, and again, just keeping that consistency with the tropes. Whenever Bond, you know, he's like sitting in a chair at the dinner table, and then like the metal handcuff or the metal cuffs go chunk, and like he's caught, and he's like, oh, funny quip, you know, and you're like, ha 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 ha, you're in peril, but you're still making jokes, like you're confident. In that situation, they made it believable because he is in peril. But he's making a joke, and you're like, oh, dude, you're so tough. You're so good. You're so, oh, you tough guy. Like, it's super convincing because it sets that character up not under, like, what do you call him? Like, not cheesy circumstances, but, like, what's the word I'm looking for? I'll remember it later. It would happen, and his reaction to it isn't, huh? You think that's funny, eh? Bah! Like, he just goes, like, oh, yeah, you're a funny man. Yeah. In the balls. And just his whole speech about torture, and he's like, why people make it so complicated? I'm like, oh, my God. Don't touch him.
These guys are just acting on a different level, too, in this scene. Mods, Mikkelsen, you know, whatever he's going through, It's very intense.
Oh, yeah.
And apparently very sweaty. It looked so hot in there.
It did. I wonder if they just misted everyone first.
Their method. They got
They did 12 push-ups each.
They got slapped in the balls. You know, this movie is extremely accurate to the book. This is one of the Bond books I read. It was the first one I ever read. But it's been a while, so I don't remember every detail. But I do know this is maybe the most accurate to the book with additional things, but there are certain things they changed, including there is this torture scene in the book, but Lashif is not bashing him with that rope, that knotted rope. He's bashing him in the balls with a carpet beater, you know, those like wanded things.
Oh.
He's like, psh.
Wow, that's very like Eastern European of him. This is my babushka stuff. Yeah. She did the same to me. Puff.
Yeah, that's right.
And my father before me. Okay, I'm done. Sorry.
But you know, through this torture Bond endures, Lashif is killed by by Mr. White, who we see earlier in the movie. Oh no, we don't see him earlier, do we?
Who?
Mr. White.
We do. Doesn't he talk to him in the opening scene?
No.
Oh, that's just a different white guy.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay.
Anyway, yeah, this is the first time you see him. It's confusing to me because he is in a few other Bond movies. But anyway.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, he
kills. I had a hard time keeping up with this one. I'm like, oh, fuck.
So what I'm getting at is you know, Bond escapes. He's, you know, healing. And in this time, Vesper obviously garners this great appreciation for him throughout their time together, but she sees his character truly, and she starts to fall in love with him, and Bond does the same.
Yeah.
Like they kind of did what they did not only for a queen and country, but for love. And you really do feel that, especially in this sequence where Bond's at the rehabilitation center and stuff like that, and they do fall in love, and they're going to gallivant the world together and leave their old lives behind. And, you know, Bond's shedding his armor.
His resignation letter's an email. It just really humanizes him, where he just needs to, like, hit send.
Yeah. And then M calls. He's like, we'll talk about that later.
Yeah.
Anyway, why haven't you transferred the funds? Well, it's because Vesper's a sneaky deaky.
And then it's like, ton, ton, ton. And you're like, oh, my God, the plot thickens.
Yep.
It's so cool.
What confused me as a young kid, and I think they shouldn't have done this. You see Lashif get shot, right? Sort of. Like, you see the gun go off, and then a body falls in front of you, but it's like, you know, just the eyes and the forehead.
Mm-hmm.
And a few scenes later, Vesper sees some dude on the docks, and it's very concerning for her. He's kind of far away, but he has got an eye patch. Same eye that Lashif was, like, crying blood out of. Mm-hmm. And he kind of looks like Mads Mikkelsen.
I don't think so at all.
A little bit. To the layperson. To a 15-year-old, maybe.
Okay, to a 15-year-old American who's like, white guy. Other white guy. Okay, white guy.
Who has, like, an eye patch. I'm
who
like,
grew up in the woods.
At first, I was like, oh, is he still alive? Like, what's going on? And it's not him, obviously. Mm-hmm. But I thought that was an odd choice. Like, why even have a guy with, like, an eye patch?
I like there? It. I think it's like, ooh, what happened to the chief's eye? Ooh, what happened to that guy's eye? Is the other guy gonna have something with his eye? Like,
yeah,
it's just
they all have eye patches. Yeah, wait,
at Spectre, there's like a pink eye epidemic.
Yes, right.
Yeah. I was like trying to find the word for epidemic. I was like, pandemic. Yeah, I love the eye patch. I was like, cool. Throwback.
Like, but here, like,
man.
Like I mentioned earlier, Mathis wasn't the double crosser. It was Vesper.
Mm-hmm.
And she was doing it because, you know, this organization has her boyfriend hostage, and, you know, yeah. Life happens, and, you know, she's had a change of heart. Not that she's like, go ahead, kill my boyfriend, but she's
come to terms with it that he's probably already dead.
Not only that, like, she just wants to finish this job, finish mm-hmm. this commitment, and then be with Bond.
Yeah.
But she's so guilty over it, mm-hmm. especially when he finds out and chases her down, and the ending action scene ensues, which is pretty wild, but
mm-hmm.
ultimately, yes, Vesper does drown.
Yeah.
And he tries to save her, but she does not want to
that
be saved.
That scene is so intense. I mean, not just because a girl drowns and someone's trying to save her, but like him like punching through that door and like just trying to, he's so mad at her, and there's so much regret for like wanting harm on her, because he does, like, what is this, like, I'll shoot her. It's like, not if I do it first.
Yeah.
You know, like,
oh,
he vocalizes that want, that like desire to end her life, or not even end her life, but just to like that betrayal, that like just the gut-wrenching feeling of just like, how could I have been so stupid? I should have finished her off when I could have, you know, because that's the spy kicks in, not the lover, the spy. And he's really good at being a spy, obviously, because he kind of killed her. But there's so much regret in that moment. You can, like, the fact that it happened so quickly, from him saying, not if I do it first, to him trying to save her, there's not a lot of time that goes by. But obviously those feelings are still there, and it's just conveyed so beautifully in that attempt at a rescue and mm-hmm. him trying to resuscitate her. I don't like when they try to do CPR in movies, because if you're CPR certified, you know you're supposed to like dig into the chest cavity, and you're supposed to keep your arms, and you're supposed to sing that song, and he didn't do any of that. But you know, when he's kind of like barely pushing her, obviously he's not going to do it because it's acting and you don't want to hurt her, and those are the ribs, they're very fragile. I just don't like it when they do CPR. To me, it took me out of it, but that's just a tiny little detail in Margot's world.
That's
but
one
the
of
whole,
those.
But it's still so intense as he's like giving her mouth to mouth, and then he just ends up kissing her. Oh my god!
Yeah,
tragic.
He does that. He ends up kissing her, and when he pulls away, and when he knows she's dead, and he like has that look, just like,
yeah.
I get choked up hard. I didn't tell you, but I did every time I watch that movie. Like, that gets me misty eyed for sure.
You shed a little tear.
I do.
Corner of your eye.
A man tear.
Yeah. Some of his blood.
Nothing sinister. I remember all the quotes in this movie.
Yeah, you do.
Especially this one, when M calls and he's like, "The job is done. The bitch is dead."
Does he say that?
Oh, yeah.
About her?
Yeah.
Whoa. I don't remember that. That's,
he's like,
that's tough.
Yeah, he's like, nothing. Job is done. The bitch is dead. Which is ripped right out of Fleming. That's like right from the book.
Oh, wow.
And then that's when M reveals like what Vesper was doing, what they found out. Like, she was doing this for her boyfriend, and she mm-hmm. did care about you, and she did that to save you. And like, that's yada, yada, yada.
And then he's like, okay. Cool. And then he like ends the phone call.
Yeah, he's back and he hunts down Mr. White. That's and then you get that great scene where you finally get the Bond music, the James Bond theme song.
And not just that.
Oh, yeah, you get the line. You
please,
do
please, please, after you, after you. I'm going to fuck it up. I'm going to be like, I'm James Smith.
Like, Craig. Daniel Craig.
Margo. I'm sorry, that was really loud.
Yeah, you get the Bond, James Bond.
My big thing about that, so I think... Again, it was just the filmmakers like, come on public, because again, the hesitation a lot of people had with Daniel Craig being Bond, the, you know, the mixed feelings, and that whole movie was setting up, I mean, it's the first story, first Fleming story, right? Mm-hmm. Setting up Bond. You're not going to say, I'm John. See? I did it. I'm Bond, James Bond at the beginning of the movie because people were like, no, you're not. In that opening scene, before even the gun barrel, if he had said that, I bet you would have been pissed. As nostalgic, you would have been like, no, you're not. And then you would have stormed out of that theater. But they saved it. They showed you James Bond. And then they told you who's daddy. You know? Yeah.
He became James Bond by the end of it.
Big time. Great set. The whole movie was a setup. No, like, it just... They built the character, and then they established it. They, like, planted their flag. They're like, yeah, hey, guys, that's James Bond. And then everyone fucking, no, wait, that's not good. Not in movie theaters. Never mind. Sorry.
You know what's interesting, too, is, yes, this was Ian Fleming's first story of James Bond. Why did it, and they started these movies in 62, why did it take till 2006 for Eon Productions to make Casino Royale? Well, it's because they didn't own the rights to the story.
Ooh.
The story was sold off well before, you know, the traditional James Bond movie was being made. There's a couple renditions of this story. There was I think it was a made for TV movie of James Bond, but I think he called himself Jimmy Bond. I can't remember.
Okay.
It's black and white movie. It was an American film. Yeah, it's. I've never really
Jimmy,
watched it.
Of all the goddamn. Wait, was it a comedy?
No.
Oh.
Not this one. Not this one. And I say that because in 1967, there is a comedy movie of Casino Royale.
Mm-hmm.
It stars like David Niven and Peter Sellers and.
Has that great song.
Oh, what?
Casino Royale. I don't know how it goes, but I don't remember. It's great.
James Bond is here. Have no fear.
It's Tom Jones the whole time.
Yeah. Ursula Andress is in it. What's his name? Who directed Citizen Kane?
Orson Welles.
Orson Welles.
Was it? Oh,
Orson
wow. Welles. That was a shot in the dark.
Yeah, Orson Welles plays Le Chiffre.
Okay.
But it's a comedy movie. However, it's not very funny. It's a little. I don't even want to say it's charming. It's attempts at humor. They're there.
they tried.
Oh, what's his name? I can't remember his name. He played Z in Ants. Andy Woody Allen. Woody Allen's in it too. He plays
main villain.
Yeah, it's a confusing movie a little bit. There's a lot of directors on it too, and like they all play James Bond at one point. Like David Niven is James Bond, Peter Sellers is James Bond, Ursula Andress plays James Bond at one point. It's a little odd, and it is the story kinda.
Okay,
we'll watch it someday because I do kind of like it. I find it cozy. I'd like to fall asleep to it every now and then. I mentioned this on the show. I find Bond movies cozy, and I fall asleep to them.
I'd like to also make a point that you don't just fall asleep to them. You'll pick up where you left off the night after.
So
you'll watch it over the course of like a week, 2 weeks, whatever. Mm-hmm. I fall asleep to a movie, and then I'm like, well whoops.
Yeah. And this is what I'll say about regarding Casino Royale and falling asleep to it. I have fallen asleep to the 67 Casino Royale way more than the 2006 one. I actually rarely do because...
Bang, bang, pew, pew.
So it's a little too high octane a little bit. And I don't know. I hold Casino Royale in a, like a higher reverence, and I just kind of watch it a little more casually, or not casually, selectively.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, but yeah, it's a little bang bang pew pew for my sleepy by taste, but Casino Royale 67 is pretty cozy.
Oh yeah.
But what I'm getting at also is they just never had the rights up until more recently in like the early 2000s. Who had it? Did MGM? MGM didn't have it. That's who ended up making it. It's like Sony had it or something, and MGM had Spider-Man, and they kind of
they
like sold it and
they
traded.
Like Pokemon traded the freaking thing.
Yeah, it was
okay,
like,
that's nice.
We'll give you Spider-Man if you give us Casino Royale and some money and or something like that.
And then some. That's great, because that movie did really well, didn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. it did. It did very well.
Very good.
I don't know what it made in the box office, but I think it was the most successful Bond film until Skyfall came out.
Very
yeah.
cool. Very cool.
And Skyfall's kind of where it stands. If you look at inflation, I think Thunderball is the most successful Bond film.
I always look at inflation. That's the first thing I do in the morning.
Aren't you funny? So, you know, we've gone through Casino Royale here, and you can kind of assume our verdict on this movie. Where does it belong? Is it for the nostalgic from 2006, or is it for is it for newcomers?
Well, so like I said, back to my previous point where I kind of spoiled it, it's just the fact that like it maintained that Bondness, it established good versus bad. I was lost during the movie a couple times, but I didn't. It wasn't in a way where I'm like, wait, I missed this. What's going on? It was like bad, good, fight. Ah, end of story. It was perfect. Easy to follow. You know, there's details that get overlooked sometimes by me. But overall, it was just a great freaking movie. You don't need to worry about the previous Bonds, but you get a taste of the Bond fandom. So I really do think this is like the perfect Bond film for the novice. Because you get all those little tropes, and then if you go back and watch the other ones, you're like, wait a minute, he did that there. You get to get introduced to the fandom in a very welcoming way. Mm-hmm. Like, palatable, dynamic, fun, funny, sexy, everything. You get all the Bond stuff, and it's a modern take. So it's, things are taken more seriously. So I think it's for the novice.
Mm-hmm.
Period. Like, I mean, yeah, sure, the nostalgia can like come if they want to, but like, I think this is for the novice viewer.
Yeah. I said in our GoldenEye episode that if I'm to introduce someone to James Bond, it's either GoldenEye or Casino Royale.
Mm-hmm.
And I went GoldenEye over Casino personally, only because Casino Royale is a little long. It's almost 2.5 hours long. And if I'm introducing someone to this like series... Casino Royale kind of, you know, like freshened things up, changed it a bit by keeping it familiar also. So if I'm introducing someone to this like grand series, I might want to show them something else. Not that that means anything against Casino Royale, because I do think it's a damn near perfect movie. I think it's one of the best action films period ever made. And, you know, it definitely makes you question, like, who is my favorite? Is my favorite James Bond Daniel Craig's portrayal? This person who I didn't like going in or didn't want to like. And, like, for a lot of people, he's their definitive Bond now, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah.
So
would you say novice nostalgic or both?
Oh, it's definitely for everyone, but yeah, for the novice, we're in agreement there. Like, this is a key introductory Bond film, or could be. It's funny, like, certain people, you show them Casino Royale, and they're like, oh, that's incredible, show me more. And then you show them The Man with the Golden Gun, and they'll be like, what the
This
hell?
Is not what I asked for.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the verdict is in, so I don't like how I said that. The verdict is in. Much better. All right. Well, this has been A Good Squeeze. You can find us on Instagram at A Good Squeeze, not A Good Squeeze Pod. I'm going to rub that in till the cows come home. Yeah, so find us on Instagram for updates and cool art and such. There will be a website coming up soon some special surprises. I guess I didn't tell you, but yes, there will be. Yeah, but on that note.
Yeah, you can, wherever you're listening to us now, you can probably assume that's where you can find us.
Yeah.
We're everywhere you find your podcasts. Friends. Tell your friends. Yeah. Tell your mother. Tell your mother's friends.
But don't tell your dad.
No, keep it secret. Keep it safe.
Yeah. All right, well, on that note, I'm Margo,
and I'm August,
and this has been
a good squeeze.